episode 52 of Island CT Podcast.
A podcast about science, nature, technology, education, and that's all written. But I think we might as well say ARDF.
ARDF.
And orienteering. Although we haven't done much about orienteering, but that's going to increase.
Rock climbing. Anyway. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick, and together we are the hosts of the Island Creative Time Podcast, a smoothly running podcast with pre-set up notes so that we know exactly what to say by Kelly Sears.
And we try.
So it's July 5th.
Right.
We tried yesterday, but kind of failed. We're just getting back into it. But it hasn't been too long since our last one.
Right.
Actually, I have our webpage up. We have a bit of administrative stuff. We're really excited.
Yes.
To get this going again. The last one was just June 24th. So we're doing well.
So our goal is to start doing our podcasts. At least
every other week, like the original plan, but maybe a bit shorter.
Yeah.
But we might end up doing it even more because of our new setup and everything.
Right.
So the sound quality might be a little bit lower. We're not certain.
Right. So we're trying a new sound system.
Actually, go ahead.
New mics. So.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it looks like we're on this kind of the same level.
Good.
Maybe a little bit lower, but so. We have a new toy.
Yes.
The Zoom H1.
Right.
And that's what's recording us now with a splitter. And two of the Lavalier microphones. Okay, these guys.
Right.
Hooked on to our, they're the little type that you see on the news where people have them clipped to their collars.
Exactly.
So we're going to see how it works. We are willing to go with the lower quality because we are really more outdoors people than sitting in your room people.
Right.
And this will allow us to
bring it with us.
Bring it with us, do it wherever. And so that's really exciting. So that's our setup. And a little bit later in the podcast, we're going to stop and then start it up again and try it without the Lavaliers. Just go straight to the Zoom H1 and see how it works. So we'll let everybody know how it works out. And Bear Island is coming up.
Yes.
So we might try it there.
So we're looking forward to trying a podcast there.
Yeah.
We've been digging around in science this week. And
yeah.
Patrick's been doing it for the last 2 weeks. I've been out of town. So do you want me to start?
Sure.
Okay. One of the articles or news article that caught my eye was
Actually, before you start, one thing that really worked well is if we said everything we're going to talk about.
Okay.
At the beginning, remember? Because it was, so what are you going to talk about now?
Okay. I'm going to talk about the polio.
So about, outbreak. We're going to talk about polio outbreak in the DRC. Are we going to cover
Neanderthal
brain organoids.
Organoids, yeah.
So that'll be fun. And are we going to talk about this? Okay.
Yes.
So we're also going to talk about a psychology experiment having to do with human judgment, which is a lot of fun. And then future plans?
Yes.
And that's pretty much it.
Right.
Okay. So you go with your polio.
Okay. So I recently read a news article in Science. It was posted on July 2nd, 2018, and it talks about an outbreak in the Congo threatening global eradication efforts. And I found it a really interesting article, or it's a small article, because it starts you to think about herd health and whether they're vaccinated, and if you have most of the herd vaccinated, then you're great. But when we drop below that level, it and we're using live vaccines, it also causes outbreaks. And There's a fear about mutations taking place because of a wild virus threat for the polio. And it just, I think it's a really interesting news article. Very sad that we're starting to have 29 children impacted where in Uganda where they're paralyzed. But if we as we look at the epidemic, we can see that it's spreading out, and I think it gives us great opportunity to start to think of treatment and possible changes in our way of treating it. So what did you think about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally on board with you. I actually did not know about this problem with the oral polio vaccine.
I had no idea.
Mutating, and but I have to say, it's not as oh, you get this vaccine-derived polio virus, mm-hmm. and then you've got the chance of it mutating and become this super bug inside you. Mm-hmm. That, you know, at first I was like, what? Really? Like,
right.
We've been around the polio virus for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the live vaccine polio virus, right? And this is just not something that's come up.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't come up in the West.
No.
That's what I got out of this that was interesting.
Right.
So if you look at the article, basically, it says, okay, rare mutant derived from weakened live virus. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the oral polio vaccine, OPV. And then you have the circulating vaccine derived polio viruses, CVDPVs. Boy, they like their acronyms.
Right.
But if you look further down in this short article, which I didn't look up any of the references or anything, but it says specifically, for a short time after vaccination, the weakened live virus can spread from person to person, boosting immunity even in those who don't receive the polio drops. But in rare instances, in poor countries such as the DRC, where many children, that's the important thing, where many children have not been vaccinated, mm-hmm. I'm quoting directly, the virus can continue circulating for years,
right.
accumulating mutations until it reverts to its dangerous form. So basically what's happening is it's not you give someone attenuated polio virus and then it mutates. No, it's because no one's vaccinated.
Right.
And so you give them this attenuated polio and it jumps from person to person. None of whom have been vaccinated, all these children from mm-hmm. one to the other, it keeps going and it goes on for years and years. And then finally, it's not one mutation.
No.
It's like so many mutations that finally it breaks out of what we did to it to stop it from being a true virus. So this is a failure on two fronts. On the one, we have so much experience with the polio vaccine
mm-hmm.
as being so efficacious in the West.
Right.
Where we had the money to put in the really big effort. It's not the money, because a lot of money is going into fixing mm-hmm. the DRC.
Oh, yeah.
It's the money relative to the population that needs
mm-hmm.
to be vaccinated, right?
Right.
And the campaigns worked because of the education level and the effort mm-hmm. and so on. And you go to the DRC and people are not being vaccinated. So the failure on the one side is us not understanding that you can't just do it in these countries like you did in the West.
Right, right. It has to be a new plan.
Yeah.
And it has to be thinking about
that,
you know, about the herd and how much of your herd is already vaccinated.
Exactly.
The other thing is the health of the individuals in those communities to start with.
Right,
you know, if
that's
you have
right.
a healthier population where they're getting food, where they're able to have shelter and all the things that we need for quality of life, clean water. And then their quality of life is immediately different, yeah. and the spread of disease is not as prevalent.
Or even the spread of the attenuated virus.
Right, right.
You have sick kids, it's probably mm-hmm. always going to find another sick kid to jump to and make it through.
Exactly.
You have more healthy kids. I mean, we're just guessing here, right? Mm-hmm. But you have more healthy right. kids. The attenuated virus is probably not going to make it through three or four jumps. Mm-hmm. And according to this, it's got to be jumping around for years before it finally turns into a virulent type again.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to be excited about something that's harming people, right. but it's very interesting.
It is. Right? And that's why I was trying to make the point. You know, if you're looking at from the lens of epidemiology, it's like an interesting problem that can be resolved.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of thinking through the population and what that population requires.
Yep.
So I was, when I looked at it, I'm always attracted to those articles because my aunt had polio in this uh-huh. and survived it. And so I'm always interested to see, oh my goodness, another outbreak? I have to read about this. So very interesting article. Okay, so moving on to the Neanderthal brain
organoids.
I know, I love the term organoid.
I don't just love the term or even the, but I mean, they are so full of crap. I'm sorry, but it's at the same time really exciting,
mm-hmm.
but the tone of the article is like, you've got to be kidding,
exactly.
Right?
I, yeah.
Anyway, mm-hmm. but it's a lot of fun. So, do you want to start off?
Sure.
Okay.
So, we have cells from a fossilized skull of a Neanderthal.
So, wait a second. This is basically a news piece?
Or I should say DNA.
It's a news piece.
It's a news piece.
Out of Science, the AAAS Science, June 22nd issue, mm-hmm. page 1284. Neanderthal brain organoids come to life. Anyway, so go ahead.
Right. So we have DNA from a fossilized skull of a Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I think they get it from all the bones.
Yeah.
It's not particularly the skull.
Yeah, I agree. And they're using a combination of the DNA, the ancient DNA, and they're using an editor of CRISPR to help incorporate it into stem cells. And
two groups are doing this.
Yep, two groups. And then the cells were then observed in comparison to human.
Right, exactly.
Human yeah. DNA. And to see what that early development of the brain would look like in both cases.
Well, that's exactly, I mean, you have it exactly on the head, the early development of
right.
the brain.
Right.
Not early as in history, early as in development.
Right.
Psychology type thing,
right? Right.
So, yeah. So let me go a little bit more into depth
mm-hmm.
about this, picking things apart. Because it's like, yeah, we're growing Neanderthal brains and human brains and comparing them.
Right.
Should we go straight to the end and just go to the crazy part before we explain what they're really doing?
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to quote directly. Developed, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Modern human brain organoids to the stage where his team can detect oscillating electrical signals in the balls of tissue. They are now wiring the organoids, I mean basically brains, to robots that resemble crabs, hoping the organoids will learn to control the robot's movements. Ultimately, Muotri, that's one of the authors, or one of the researchers, wants to pit them against robots run by brain Neanderthals, basically Neanderthal brains. I mean, this is real, right?
Right.
Okay, so let me pick this apart, which, I mean, I'm really excited for this.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what you should be really reading. there's no Neanderthal DNA being expanded from bones and used. No. They're not even having a Neanderthal genome and creating early stage brain for it. No. That's not what's happening. There's two groups making Neanderthal genes. That's not even correct. Looking at what the Neanderthal genome is and making alterations to genes with that as a guidance.
Right.
And then growing very early stage neural tissue in culture.
Right.
And then...
pluripotent stem cells.
Well, they're using the pluripotent stem cells to get their tissue.
Right.
And one group, which that's the group out in Germany, seems like they're the most...
they're leading.
Well, I don't know if they're really leading, but they're doing two different things, the two groups. But they seem more restrained about like what the focus is.
Right.
We actually don't know at all what they're doing. None of this has been published. Mm-hmm. Only one group, the American group, has actually talked about it in a conference, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what they did, okay? They took the stem cells, and did they use stem cells, pluripotent stem cells?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And they're human cells. Mm-hmm. And then they looked at the genome from, well, not even genome. We don't have a full genome, really, but...
Right.
I mean, I guess maybe we do. I don't know. But genes that they that were taken out of bones and sequenced by another group, and they looked at a single gene.
Right.
Right? Just one gene out of all of the Neanderthal genes, right? And out of that, and then that one gene... They looked at just a single amino acid that was different in a gene we also have.
Right.
And then they used CRISPR to change just that one amino acid in that one human gene. So the only difference between their human organoids and their Neanderthals is that they're both entirely human except for one gene, and that one gene is entirely human in Neanderthal brain or organoid, except for that one amino acid that was usually this different kind in Neanderthals. So basically you're comparing human to human with one amino acid from one gene. Now, the results in action of that one gene, if CRISPR, which they used to make the change, didn't totally do all sorts of other things, which it looks like they're trying to control for that really well. But whatever it caused, that just that one change, maybe can give us insight about what that gene does, and maybe it does do a lot. Because they specifically picked a gene that controls many other genes.
Right.
So if that was the different in Neanderthals, and if that gets messed up in human disease, then, you know, maybe, yeah, you can make some comment. But I cannot believe you can change one amino acid.
Right.
In there to make Neanderthals and compare it to human and not do some other random changes, right? What if you pick some other random and ended up with the exact same morphological changes?
Right.
I mean, how do you say this is Neanderthal unless you do a bunch more? So we have no data, basically.
No.
But it is just amazingly cool.
It is. It is very cool. Yeah. And just the idea of the study is very interesting.
Yeah. I'm not even going to talk about the human diseases they're trying to like associate their conclusions with.
I found that too far reaching.
Yeah, too far.
And so I didn't mention it either. Yeah. But we should say the article comes from June 22nd edition of Science, and mm-hmm. it was published in 2018.
Yeah.
So, and the author is John Cohen.
The more important, the two groups. Who are the Americans? Allison Muotri in San Diego. So they're the ones that presented their findings at a conference.
Right.
And
Max Planck.
Well, that's the Max Planck Institute.
Yeah. Institute.
Vante Pabo.
Yeah, sorry.
Director of Pabo. Is he involved in the research?
I'm not sure after I read the incorrect name. I was looking for.
Yeah, his group. Yep, okay. That's him. So, Svante Pabo, Max Planck Institute. It's the one in Leipzig.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't exactly know what they're doing.
No.
I mean, the thing about these organoids is that, they're very early stage brains. I wish they told us. Did you notice if they mentioned how many cells are in these organoids?
No, they did not, because I thought,
So they have scale bars on the organoids, and it looks like they're anywhere between 500 microns across and maybe 1,000 microns.
Right.
So that's already a lot of cells,
mm-hmm.
But they're basically neural tissue, and they already have neural connections they're making, and so they mm-hmm. have action potentials, I suppose, and stuff like that. And so,
right, it'll be interesting to see what comes of this research and how it develops.
So. I'm hearing Basil in the background. I wonder if the microphones are picking him up. He's just angry out there, squawking.
And our next article.
So, actually, maybe we'll switch the microphone when we do future plans.
Okay, sounds good.
So maybe next article right now.
Okay. So our next article I found was just mind-blowing. And,
Oh my gosh! I just noticed one of the authors. Third author. Do you see it?
Oh, yeah.
Timothy D. Wilson.
We have one of his books.
He has
books.
A book that's
awesome.
Really good. Is it called Redirect?
Yep,
Redirect. So we have to say, this is years ago. It sounds so boring, mm-hmm. but Timothy D. Wilson is the third author in this article, and I just only realized this second. And it sounds really boring, but his book is all about programs in society and how they go on even when the data shows that they're not helping.
Right.
Because they're so much invested mm-hmm. in believing, like things like the DARE program against drugs mm-hmm. and other stuff.
Right.
And his point was like psychology has a lot to say about what works and what doesn't, but because it takes so much effort to get good to get stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
That the psychology is usually ignored for political reasons. You never want to tell someone that several million dollars to help kids has been a total failure type thing, right? So,
right.
But that's really cool to see him as an author.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
University of Virginia, Charlottesville. Cool. Anyway, so go ahead.
So the prevalence, the title of the article is The Prevalence-Induced Concept Change in Human Judgment.
And this is original research.
Yep.
It's not a review article or anything.
I love the simplicity of this. So basically, they had volunteers that they worked with, and they were to look at 200 dots and decide what ones were blue.
1,000 dots.
1,000 dots. Yeah, 1,000 dots.
So this was very confusing since we talked about it quite a bit. And I wrote down here, there's seven different studies, mm-hmm. and some of them have to do with looking at dots and others, and I'll just explain this.
Mm-hmm.
Each person had to look at 1,000 dots. Mm-hmm. But they don't report the data on all the dots.
Right.
So, let's explain a little bit more. The dots have different colors.
Right.
On a range from totally blue to totally purple. Mm-hmm. And they're asked to say, well, is this a blue dot or purple dot, basically?
Right.
So the data reported, there's always an initial and a final reported. Mm-hmm. Out of the 1,000, so you pick a, you go through 1,000, this 1,000 times, shown a dot, is this blue or is this purple, right? The initial is the first 200 dots. Mm-hmm. Then you go through 600 dots that they're not even recording the outcome.
Okay.
But the amount of blue or purple might change during that time. Mm-hmm. That you see, the fraction, right?
Right.
And then the what they call final, in quotes, mm-hmm. in air quotes here, are the last 200. So you go 200, that's the initial, then 600, no reporting, then right. the final. Okay. I know, this was a little, I had mm-hmm. to read it three or four times to really understand
it. I was
it.
Rereading, like, sentences to make sure I understood their finding.
Yeah.
So, I found it really interesting. And what they were looking at is at how our viewpoints creep or change over time. Mm-hmm. And so they started with color. And if they, you know, in their initial and their final for, you know, very purple, very blue, when nothing was changed, stayed pretty much the same.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, if there was no change in frequency.
Right.
You basically considered a blue dot blue and a purple dot purple the same as you always did from the beginning.
Right. However, in the second study, and I'll need help with this.
Or the second group in the
second,
first study.
Yeah, the second yeah. group in the first study. They had to...
I think they gave them more blue dots.
Right. They gave them more blue and they had to distinguish between the blue and the purple dots still.
Right.
Right. And what did they find?
Well, you're asking me.
Yep.
Well, then basically you show them more blue dots and they start counting some of the blue dots is actually purple.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically if you keep getting the same, if you get stimulus where you can judge something one way or another, mm-hmm. and one way you start seeing a lot of that, you mm-hmm. reorganize the way you think to even out the odds type thing.
Right.
If you see a lot of blue, you start to think, well, oh, that's a purple, when before you'd say, well, no, that's a blue, just because you haven't seen a purple in a while.
I found it fascinating.
Yeah, I did too.
Because even when they used, and they said, well, if you get this right, you're going to get, we'll give you a cash prize for
getting
all of yeah. the ones correct. And what was really fascinating is that the people, the participants, still weren't able to do it.
Yeah.
So even with the incentive, they weren't able to do it. And which made me start to think of, oh my goodness, how am I impacted?
Well, I remember
by different things around me.
So they tried to get a moral imperative. Right. And they went on to do some studies about they asked people to pretend they were on a review board for research.
Right.
And they had ethical and unethical. And
right.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in our own thing, totally nothing to do with ethical judgments. When we do orienteering, I thought, this is really funny. You look at your map and you're going across and you don't see boulders in a while, and you're
right.
searching for a boulder, and you see this tiny little thing. It's like, oh, there's a boulder. And it's like, no, it's just a small rock, right?
Could be. Might yeah, be a boulder.
Could be. Could be. But then when you're in a boulder field, you're looking at all sorts of stuff and you're like, what you consider a boulder, basically. It's like, no, no, no. It's like the purple and blue, yeah, right?
Exactly.
And we have a huge incentive there, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're trying to get to the next control.
Right.
And psychologically, you know you're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And yet I find myself out there.
Oh.
And convincing myself, oh yeah, that's the boulder, when I haven't seen a boulder in a while. And it's not quite in this position I expected, but I come across one.
Oh yeah.
But then I come across another one just 30 or 40 meters away that's bigger. And I'm like,
And I find the same thing when you make an error, like going south instead of north, because you'll have a direction error that you can make every once in a while in orienteering. It's a complete mess. But you're following and you're looking at your map and you could swear that you saw all of the features until something really stands out as wrong. Yeah. So it's the same thing. It's amazing.
So I think I want to be a little bit clear, because we have a personal, really, interest in this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're doing very simple experiments. Mm-hmm. But maybe we should be more explicit about what their concern is and what's actually more important for most people. Mm-hmm. Is the fact that if you're in a place where there's, for example, a lot of violence, mm-hmm. or a lot of crime, and you reduce the amount of crime through policies,
right,
public policies or police action, this says, their research says, that you will start to see things that are not as crimes, not crimes, or not unethical. You will start to see them as being crimes,
right,
or unethical. Mm-hmm. And if you have a humongous incentive to not do that, you still won't be able to help yourself.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's really important to know this, even if it shows that we can't stop it from happening, mm-hmm. you know, at least knowing that this is an effect is really important.
I agree. Because then it suddenly slows down your judgment.
Yeah, you can take a step back.
And you're questioning, you know,
and you can
what has actually happened here.
That's right. And and if you know that, you're much more likely to say, I'm going to withhold judgment. Mm-hmm. Let's look at what the numbers are. And if we don't know what even we're looking for, let's get a measure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's important. I think that's what Wilson's one thing that I got from Redirect is, don't trust the narrative.
Right.
Look for numbers. Mm-hmm. Look for what's happening. And anyway, so that was an interesting article.
It was very interesting and made me really concerned about, you know, what I know and what I don't know and how I'm changing my judgment over time on certain issues.
How you're changing your judgment and also when you're looking at the schools.
Right, right.
I mean, when you're working with kids. Mm-hmm. And 3 or 4 years have gone by, or even within a year, mm-hmm. for yourself, in a year, if they're getting better or if it worse, will you even notice it?
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. We believe we would. This is saying, actually, we're going to really change what we believe.
Right.
Very quickly. Because one of their studies, they had an abrupt change, and this was the blue versus purple. So mm-hmm. there's no complicated psychology. This is pure stimulus response. Blue, red, make a judgment. Abrupt change, people can help themselves by redefining what they considered blue versus red, right? That's a little bit scary how mm-hmm. the brain works like that without us realizing it. And mm-hmm. then at the higher level, from 3 or 4 years going by, and you get scores about how well students are doing in your exams. Are they changing the exams over time because of how students are doing on them?
Right.
And is there any improvement, or are things getting worse and no one's even realizing it because we're changing things as we go?
Right.
mm-hmm. because our expectations are not even being critically evaluated.
Right.
We just think they are, mm-hmm. but it's not done with, you know.
Right. It is. It's. So. I'm fascinated by this study, and I hope they do more with it in the future.
Oh, I hope so too. Yeah.
Because I would really like to see it followed in different ways, because there's so many different directions they could go in, yeah. and I, yeah. you know, it'll just be interesting yeah. to see what their next step is in this particular area. Yeah. So this article was published on June 29th, 2018 in Science.
Yep. Page 1465. Mm-hmm. And so. the author is Lavari, David E. Lavari. We already talked about our favorite person, Timothy D. Wilson. Mm-hmm. His third author, corresponding author is it the second author? Yeah. Daniel T. Gilbert, who's at Harvard.
Mm-hmm. Nice article.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
So I think
we've been doing future plans.
So I wouldn't mind taking a break.
Okay.
Changing our Zoom H1 setup.
Okay.
And
comparing them at the end.
And then putting them together. People can hear how it'll come out different.
We are going to go over our future plans.
Yep.
And we're trying a different
recording
method.
Yeah, so we've removed the Lavaliers and we have the Zoom H1 just on a little bag in a bowl between us. Now I'm going to bring these up in Audacity, these files in Audacity, and try to do the best out of that I can to make them sound good. So the difference will be, what can I do without working super hard to get these about the same, considering what ended up being recorded?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see. And it's recording in stereo, and we found out just today that, or maybe it was yesterday, I found this out, that these crossed mics or whatever, their 90-degree angle means
right.
that one will record one person better than the other. Mm-hmm. So I might have better control individually than when we had the Lavaliers
hooked
in.
Right.
So
hopefully everything works well.
Might be picking up the sound from the computers too, which will actually make it worse. So
right. We may have some serious fan effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So future plans.
Future plans. I don't have the calendar up, but I know what we're doing.
We are packing.
Bear Island is coming up.
Yep.
It's how many days away? It's 8 days?
8 days.
Let me see. Today's Thursday. We're leaving. Well, we're not leaving this Saturday. We're leaving the Saturday after.
Right.
So like 9 days.
9 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is so exciting.
Yes. We always get really excited for Bear Island because it's our time to unplug and read and actually do very little but camp.
Yeah, but it's like a full-time job.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It is. But it's a lot of fun. And we have a great paddle going out and coming back. So that's great too.
And we've basically packed up the area until we come back.
Right.
So there's, I mean, I'm not
I don't know if it's packed or more or less thrown.
Shoved in Luke's room, basically. I feel bad about that, but got to make sure the Bear Island stuff gets done first.
It's a random pile right now, but we'll get through it.
Oh, maybe I can talk a little bit about my setup, my prep setup. Yeah, so this is really cool. We used to have a spreadsheet where I turned everything on, and for the first time, instead it's a text file, which is easier to change things by hand quickly, but then it's not as easy in the text file to see the stuff.
Right.
Except I have a script. I formatted it in a special way, like came up with my own system.
Using what?
I made up stuff like, I don't know, like, I don't even remember because I'm looking at our webpage.
Okay.
But for example, If I put, so just one small example, if I put three equal signs in a row in a space, then that's like a subheading area. Three equal lines, two colons is the start of a table.
Got it.
And then three equal lines, two colons, and two dots, which is something that's easy to type, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what it is the end of the table. And then it knows in the beginning if there's of each entry, if there's three O's, it's something that's not done yet or not packed. Mm-hmm. And then whatever comes after that automatically is an entire what fits in the next cell in the table. Mm-hmm. And we actually have it up on the website.
We do.
Not for anybody to look at. It doesn't really matter. I mean, there are links to get to it if someone's interested, but it's not really. It's just for us. And it's really cool. And you can see as we pack stuff and change things around, how it gets changed. And I'm just looking quickly through here, and I'm seeing quite well. Some areas have lots of red triple O's. But there's a lot that have already, maybe like a third, that have like triple pluses, which means it's already packed. So,
right.
So we have 1 weekend left. That mm-hmm. is it. So anyway, yeah, so I have, it's all in text files, our packing list and our to-do list. And then I have a script and I run it and it creates the HTML page and then loads it up on our website. Mm-hmm. On the home server, and then I have another thing I can start it to load it up to our main server, which we use GoDaddy, and it comes up as one of our web pages, and you can get to it with your phone and stuff, see what needs to be done, and yeah, it's just cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally have dropped the. I think every year. I use spreadsheets less and less.
Right.
Because although they're easy to see the stuff, they're so much less versatile.
Right.
Than having something that you can control with a script and change things around.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
So he has everything listed but our food because he's given up on me making a formal list.
No, I'm going to fill this in after, like we started.
Yeah.
It used to be blank, right? It says right. 5 breakfasts, 4 lunch, 5 dinner snacks. Each mm-hmm. dinner is empty. Yeah. Just as Kelly's area with a smiley face. Well, we ordered our stuff already.
We did. Yeah. We ordered a lot of it, and then I have to start sorting and bagging the material so we have each lunch set aside. Because it's warm, and back at the campsite, it heats up so much. It's nice just to have one bag for your lunch, one yeah. thing for your dinner, and your breakfast is in another bag. It takes a lot less time digging through, and we can have our meals whenever we want, yeah. and they can be with us for wherever we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're looking forward to it, and yeah, we are in the midst of packing.
Did I close my, where's yep. my page?
Okay, well.
Oh, you have it up here?
Yep.
Well, thank you for listening to the Island CT podcast.
Make sure you check out our blog.
Yeah, about that.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.